Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez.
We're getting a 13-yard gain here on fourth down. And right now, not looking good. Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
Bentley play action. So Jake Bentley chased.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClaren hits our train. 1-2. He did it. McClaren has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the hood, behind the scenes, nobody really sees. Under the hood, behind the scenes, nobody really sees. Under the hood, behind the scenes, nobody really sees.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as we broadcast live from our first Midwest Bank studio.
Yeah. Money on my mind. Money on my mind. Yeah. Money on my mind. Money on my mind. Yeah. Money on my mind. Money on my mind.
That's right.
Money on my mind.
We will hear from Doug Glanville coming up at the bottom of the hour right here on ESPN 1000's thoughts about what's going on with Machado. Manny Machado coming to the South Side. You know, it's February tomorrow, February 1st. is Machado and Harper going to sign by the time we get to the spring training? That's in a couple weeks, by the way. We'll talk to him about that, how he sees the Cubs and the White Sox and their outlook for 2019. Part of our Hot Stove segment coming up at the bottom of the hour here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you're with me. Don't forget to subscribe and download the podcast, the Under the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood. That's me. If you're listening on the podcast, you say, why does this man continue to talk about the Under the Hood podcast? Because I have to have you tell somebody else. Don't be selfish with it. My content and just not going to share it with people, don't do that. We've got Google Play. We've got iTunes, we've got SoundCloud, TuneIn app. Wherever you download your podcast, you say, I can't listen between 7 and 10. I work overnights. I can't listen live. Or I've got family. Or I've got this and that to do. Well, that's why you could take the show with you. Listen to it when you have to. Look, I know it's 2019. And for those of you listening to us right now, thank you so much for listening. But if you don't catch all 3 hours, that's how you do it. That way you never miss content. You never know what I'm going to say. Tonight might be my last show. But you want to be able to hear it on podcast. You want to hear the downfall, don't you? I'm on the edge all the time. So you just never know what I'm going to say. This could be the end. So if it's the end, at least you'll hear it on the podcast, right?
Right. It'll be a historic podcast. So you better download it.
Absolutely.
Because you never know.
Then, Eric, you'll be able to produce the show you want to produce with Fred. As you are listening here to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. He didn't deny it, did he, folks? Well, now, every Thursday at 9 o'clock, you and Sean can produce the show you want to produce. Then, you know, I'm out of the picture.
Keep me out of it.
All right. Beg your pardon. Well, you can produce the show you want to produce then, guys. I'll be out of the picture, outside the window, trying to get in.
You'll be sitting on the milk crate watching. Is that what you're saying? Like everyone else
yes.
out there?
Yes. I'll be out there with the audience, with the, you know, with my milk crate and just clapping. As we go to commercial.
Yes. You got to love when you get the applause outside.
That is the best. I love when our unfortunate are out front clapping as we go to commercial. That's my live event. That's my remote. I hit the stinger. I go, ESPN 1000. And they're like, hey.
All four of them are going wild out there.
I'm like, dude, I'm not a remote. But it's their remote, though. They go back to the box, you know, mm-hmm. to go back to Lakeshore.
This is their trip.
They go back to the Lakeshore Drive, and they talk about what I talked about there, you know. I inform them, entertain them. They got to get a chance to watch Milwaukee, Toronto on the big screen.
You give them plenty of good fodder to talk around the burning garbage can.
That's true. So that's why I'm here. If that's all the people that's listening, I'm good. Because at least they're loyal enough to stand out there and listen to me bloviate about Chicago sports for 3 hours a night. So, yeah, that's cool. Like, y'all should be at the Pacific Mission. What y'all doing here? Don't be listening to me. I got nothing to say. You should go where someplace is warm. But they'd rather stand out there and listen to me talk about, you know, the White Sox and the Cubs. So, I'm grateful. Hopefully they got a device.
Yeah, don't forget 5 stars, all y'all out there.
So, Throwback Thursday. You are familiar with this, right? Every Thursday in the 9 o'clock hour, when I stop talking, we get a chance to go back to the good old days. You know, the good old days when things were awesome. Memories. That's all we have, right, sports fans? That's all we have is just memories. Sometimes the memories are really great. Sometimes crazy, but it's all part of what we do every Thursday on Throwback Thursday.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Before Snapchat. Yeah. What is that? Before Twitter.
So what's the sitch?
There was. That's so throwback.
Those were the good times.
That's so throwback.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Throwback Thursday memories.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Put your hands up.
The throwback.
All you need is love.
The throwback.
Taking it back.
Go back.
The throwback.
The throwback. Throwback.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Let's go back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Throwback Thursday. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Throwback Thursday. Always a lot of fun. We always have a theme for you. They've always worked, every single one of them. This one is Super Bowl related. Of course, Super Bowl is on Sunday. So Sean and Eric combined to put this question together. It's a combination of both. Because it makes sense to me. What was your best Super Bowl memory? Was it a game that was your best Super Bowl memory? A party that was your Super Bowl memory? An incident at a party for your Super Bowl memory? I'll give you mine, and then I will ask you, Sean and Eric, your Super Bowl memories, whether it's in the game or something that was outside the game that was interesting to you. Okay, so this is just recently, a couple of years ago. My cousins, who are big-time sports fans, and I'm thinking, are they bigger sports fans than me? I don't think so. But I think their arguments are just like, it's not hot takes. It's just like the old school family battles. ACO and Wiley. My cousins love to be able to battle one another when it comes to certain sports topics. Fourth quarter, 2 years ago, Super Bowl, I'm having a get together at the Hood Cave. And everything is chill. We've got 25 people there. And all of a sudden, they both, out of nowhere, as I'm on my sixth Crown Royal, I look over to the right, and they are standing up toe-to-toe, pointing at each other about the boxing merits of Aaron Pryor. Talking about Marvin Hagler. I'm just like, what is going on here? It's like, man, Aaron Pryor was underrated. It's like, what? And then they're talking about Marvin. I was like, what is going on? The game is on. I stand in front of the big screen. I'm like, what is going on here? So I don't know what my cousins are doing. It's like talking about old boxing from the 80s that you can't even find anymore. Like, what? What?
Right in the middle of Brady's big comeback against the Falcons, too.
That game. That game. Yes.
Amazing.
It was that. Thank you. It was that game. Yes, exactly what it was. That game. In the middle of this epic comeback, when they think, oh, it's over, we can just argue about old school boxing. I'm like, what is going on? Like, do you see what's happening here? Like, the Patriots about to win this thing. Man, I'm telling you. It's like, you're not telling me anything.
Back then, they don't even compare now. Now it's like getting hit with a pillow.
It's like, Wiley, you're not telling me anything I don't know, man. I'm telling you. I'm like, and they're just, they took all of my, like, the tequila was just gone. And I don't drink tequila, so I just like, here, here's a fresh bottle of tequila. And they're just like, it was gone so quickly. They're walking around with tequila IVs in their arm, pretty much.
Random side note. Did you, I just learned this. Did you know tequila is the only alcohol that is not a depressant? Tequila's a stimulant.
Did not know that.
I didn't either. I was going, eh, it kind of makes sense. I get it.
I am not a tequila drinker at all, actually.
Me neither, for the most part.
Zero. But I will buy it for company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come by, like, I have a fine array here. Just don't leave, just leave the brown liquor to me. That's my
yes,
side.
The dark stuff for me.
And you, pardon the expression. And then and leave the rest for everybody else. Eric's been working on the show for a while. So that's one of my memories. That's one for sure. Let me ask you, Eric, what is your Super Bowl memory on a Throwback Thursday?
It's hard to, like, think of just one because I can think of, like, a commercial that sticks out in my head right away. There's a game moment that sticks out in my head right away. And then there's a performance.
Mm-hmm.
I would say game-wise, I strictly vividly remember being in my buddy's Petey's basement. We were in high school. I believe this had to be junior or senior year. And the 1 yard short when the Titans were playing the Rams. And I believe it was Kevin Dyson got tackled with, like, no time left, stretching out for the end zone and just missing it. So game-wise, that one sticks out to me a lot.
Was that a great game to you?
To me, in my head, it does. I can't replay all of it, but I just remember the end coming down to being so tight.
I love the ending of that game. And I remember the next day, I'm producing Boards and Bernstein afterwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, talk about that game in the hallways. And they're just, and Bernstein's like, oh, what a terrible game that was.
Of course.
I'm just like, what? Like, that was almost a touchdown right there. You don't get drama like
that.
Yeah,
that drama was awesome. It literally, it was 8 seconds it came down to is what it came down to.
After all of him telling me that it was a terrible game, I almost quit. So, almost just, it's like, that's just ridiculous.
Last straw.
And I wrote down next to me on the board, when I host, I will never talk about a great game being bad just for ratings.
Absolutely.
I wrote that down, and I've never done it since. I was just like, wow, that's terrible.
Just to be contrary.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. You remember that game, right? Heck of a finish. Whatever. All right, Sean, you tell me what was your Super Bowl memory, because it could be a game, an incident that happened at around the game, a party.
Throwback.
What was it?
Super Bowl 40, Seahawks, Steelers in Detroit. My family is from the suburbs of Detroit, so of course they expected me to come up for the weekend. I couldn't make it. Had prior engagements. Mm. The game was so boring. I got a phone call around halftime. Yo, cuz, we got the end to this industry party. Cool. Load up, me and my guys, a couple of our girls.
Gangsters.
Make it up to Detroit, just in time, party.
Yeah.
Stay up all night, kick it. Wake up the next morning, go to this breakfast spot downtown Detroit called the Breakfast Club, and hit the road immediately to come back to Chicago after a day called off of work. So
that works.
Yeah.
That's a good memory.
That's a really good memory.
I knew the Bears were going to win the Super Bowl when I saw this.
And the Colts have had a hard time all season covering kicks. It's Hester trying to work it back to the middle. Gets past the first wave, and here he goes. It's Hester. Inside the 30, Hester's going to take it all the way for a touchdown. And no flag, 92 yards.
Devin Hester.
I will absolutely always remember exactly where I was when that happened. No doubt. Jumping on a couch in college, someone knocking the speaker off the wall. Like, absolutely elation for that moment.
And I was on a plane headed down to Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, my goodness.
And the announcement came over by the pilot to say the Bears just took the lead. We just took off from Midway.
That is awesome. Now, yeah. I just want to make sure it's very clear what it's going to sound like now on CBS coming up for this Super Bowl, if Devin Hester is playing this Super Bowl.
And the Colts have had a hard time all season covering kicks.
Jim.
It's Hester trying to work it back to the middle.
He's going to score a touchdown, Jim.
Here he goes.
Jim.
Hester.
Look out, Jim.
The 30.
Jim.
He's
going to score, Jim.
Touchdown.
Look out, Jim. Jim.
Yards.
So that's how it's going to sound on CBS.
That man loves his football. Man loves his football. Same game, halftime show. That's my most memorable halftime show. That was Prince in the pouring rain in Miami, playing all his music, just shredding the guitar. That was my most memorable halftime show.
I don't think any Don't it feel good? Only wanna see you, see you. Can I play this guitar?
To me, it's about one guy in the middle of 100,000 people and 100 million people on television, and it's your moment to be Prince at the Super Bowl, and Mother Nature is dropping thousands and thousands of gallons of rain. I always thought how cool the guy is to rise up and just get stormed upon and just bring what he brought. That was so special.
Y'all wanna sing tonight? Love Prince, my favorite artist. There it is, Prince. And that is definitely a guy that I enjoyed. And by the way, as we do Throwback Thursday,
let's go back.
Here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Should I give this away? Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to say it. I don't want to spoil this for anyone that wants to see Prince. I told you that last May, Peacock and I went to see, had that tour of Prince in his place. As I mentioned, you could see it. Think about three Home Depots together. That's how big Prince's place was, where he lived and his studio. This is going to be a spoiler, so if you don't want to hear this, if you want to go, is one of the things that they did on the tour that I went is they played that entire halftime at the end of the tour. A big, huge, big screen television, you know, super, super, super HD, and that's actually part of the, at the end of the tour, where we could stand and actually watch him do that performance. And it reminded me, because I watched that at the end of that tour, I'm like, oh, wow. I remember now how awesome that was. As a Prince fan, and because it was in the rain.
He was incredible. That halftime show was amazing.
And it was a lot of unknown there, because if you hear that soundbite we just played, he's asking, like, whoever's running it, like, can I play this guitar? Because it's raining. Will I die?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like,
absolutely.
Can I play this guitar? It's like, yeah, you can. And he did. Incredible performance. Perfect for him. Messed up his hair, but he was totally fine with it. Let's take a look at the Facebook wall, Facebook.com, quickly. My cousin Patricia Woodbury, says, went to Tampa for Super Bowl 25 and was part of the festivities and the parties there. Gregory Prentice says, and Davis, you need to check the cross street and the lounge for this so you can tell me where this is, right? Greg says, at a lounge on 71st in Indiana, I feel like I've been there. We were watching the game between the Bears and the Colts, drinking shots of Hennessy. So we decided to light the shots on fire. At the same time, somebody said something funny, and we all started laughing and didn't notice that the bar was on fire. Took some time to get it under control.
Great.
What bar is that? I feel like I've been there. 71st
Leo's
Indiana.
Den?
Ah, yes. Yes. Yes, doctor. Leo's Den's got some of my money. Indeed. 71st in Indiana. Restaurant quality.
You know what I don't do enough is call bars lounges. I'm going to start using lounge more. I don't know if I've ever been like, yo, you want to go grab a couple from the lounge?
South side.
That's all right. South can side, I, can I bring that thing to the whitewashed suburbs? Is that okay?
Yes, you can.
All right.
Yes, you may.
I think they're pubs out by you, right?
Yeah, they are.
Pubs.
Yeah, well, I've never been to a pub. but lounge, yes. Hello,
right,
everybody.
Well, I'll take you to a pub. You take me to a lounge.
Actually, I can't say I haven't been to pubs. I worked in sports radio for 26 years. I've been to plenty of those. And a few lounges along the way, too. So, yes, thank you for reminding me. 71st City, yeah, they've got my money in there. What else do we have? Don says I'd be lying if I said the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction wasn't on the list. That was crazy. Corey says, sitting in my basement with my dad and watching the 85 Bears together was my favorite moment. Just he and I talking football and eating snacks. Brian Solar says, in high school, a friend lost a prop bet that required him to watch the fourth quarter locked in a dog cage.
Terrific.
A dog cage.
I love it. I like those bets way more than I like monetary bets. Way more.
Kimberly Jo Cotton says, 2007 Super Bowl party, Indianapolis against the Bears. I decorated the house in half Bears, half Colts gear. I even threw on a cheerleading outfit and did cartwheels during commercial breaks. And if you've ever seen Kimberly Jo Cotton, she looks just like a butterscotch Barbie. So that probably was restaurant quality there. It was good fun until it got really ugly. I should add, the party took place in Illinois. I was the only Indy fan there, even though we ended up winning the game. I got booed. The blue and white streamers got shredded. So,
that's why she wore the outfit and cartwheels, because she was being obnoxious and rubbing it in all the Bears fans.
The Scott Norwood miss kick. Oh, the Bills. No. Tell me how it happened, Jack Buck.
It is a 47-yard try by Scott Norwood to try to win the game for Buffalo. Lingner will snap it. Wright will hold it. Norwood will kick it from the right hash mark with 8 seconds left and the Giants leading Buffalo 20-19. It's a 47-yard kick for the Bills. Norwood assumes the position. Lingner waits to snap it. We wait. There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. Norwood missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
He assumes the position. Yes, that Titans-Rams game was terrific at Super Bowl 34. There's no question.
Back to throw is McNair. He's got Kevin Dyson, reaches to the goal line. No, he falls at the one. Time runs out. That's it. The St. Louis Rams are the world champions as Tennessee comes up 1 yard short.
Ed Perkins says, in a basement full of brothers, everyone's singing Hey Jude when the Patriots beat the Eagles.
Why? Like, why Hey Jude? Just because of the elation? I dig the song, but
which,
I don't...
Which game is that when the Patriots beat the Eagles? That wasn't this last Super Bowl.
Oh, that was the T.O. game.
Oh,
he came back from injury. Yeah.
Oh. I don't know why he wrote that.
Like, why Hey Jude? Okay.
I think that's weird. Okay. Sweet Caroline, I get it, right? But Hey Jude?
Mm-hmm, that would make sense. I don't know.
That's weird. Your friends are weird. And, of course, David Tyree.
Third and five from their own 44. Manning takes the snap. Back to throw. Under pressure. Avoids the rush. And he's going to fight out of it. Still fights out of it. Now throws it deep downfield. Wide open Tyree, who makes the catch.
How in the world did he do that?
What a play by Manning. He eluded 3 sacks. And what a catch by Tyree with 58 seconds to go.
You will always remember the catch from David Tyree from Super Bowl 42. Now, my friends, is Throwback Thursday. Let's right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Some really good responses on our Facebook wall, facebook.com. Some good stuff. You can continue to bring them in, by the way. Your best Super Bowl memory, a game, a party, or an incident that took place at a party. We got some great details, so thanks so much for checking in on that. Okay, we're going to hear from Doug Glanville coming up in a little bit, but let me get some hot stove thoughts out here. Jeff Passan was on. Let's do a little hot stove baseball here.
Yo, it's time for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
There's a drive, deep right. Cubs win! On a grand slam by Hayward.
That ball is crushed.
Angle! In the air again! Come on now! Back-to-back nights! What are you doing out there, Adam?
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
There goes Baez. Throw to the plate. Save! In! El Mago!
He's walking on fire!
Deep to the corner! Big smash for the win!
Daniel Polka once again!
He walks it off!
Yo, it's time for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So light him up.
Hot Stove Baseball. Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Hit me up on Snapchat. Snap Jay Hood. Give your thoughts on Snapchat as well as Twitter.com. Tweet Jay Hood. Talk some hot stove, baseball, of course. Anything to stay warm around here. Couple things. So I'd like to know what the White Sox are going to do when it comes to free agency. It's 2019, and the White Sox made some cursory moves. Fine. But I really believe that you want to be, obviously you want to have a free agent, a quality free agent at your price if possible. But I think that if you believe that you're going to be close the next 3 years, you need to be able to show some signs of that. Here's the difference between the White Sox and the San Diego Padres. The San Diego Padres are seemingly trying to get closer to Bryce Harper. If Bryce Harper signs with the Padres, that says something, because the Padres have bottomed out here for a little bit, but they do have some really nice young players in their system. Sound familiar, White Sox? So after signing Hosmer to a long-term deal, now Harper could be on the radar. Let's continue what we continue to read on ESPN.com, that Bryce Harper could sign going from the Nationals to the Padres. So let's hear from Jeff Passan, who was on with Cap and Company earlier, on the White Sox being open about the Machado and situation and whether or not he will sign with Chicago.
I don't know what the club's motivation is on being as publicly open. I don't know that it's a bad thing. I don't know that it's a good thing. I honestly don't know enough about, and this is something that I think we'll find out afterward. I don't know enough about how either camp feels about that particular tack. That being said, what's the motivation behind being as public as they are right now? Is it to say to a fan base that has been disillusioned by years of losing, and that has been desperately waiting for this moment to arrive, that we're trying? Is it to say to them that if we don't get these guys, hey, at least we put in the good college try? And is that, if that is the case, if they don't get Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, will that be enough to satisfy White Sox fans, or will they feel like they've been set up for this great thing? And as has been the case many times in the past, Jerry Reinsdorf, whose biggest contract ever is Jose Abreu's $68 million deal, just would not step up like he needed to.
Well, I can tell you, Sox fans, like our newsroom at NBC Sports Chicago, where Pat and I do TV, will be devastated. I have friends, my brother, yep, devastated if they don't get this guy.
Let me ask you this, though. If the Sox weren't as public as they've been with their pursuit of these players,
wouldn't be as
with
bad.
The devastation. Yeah. And so in some regards, guys, I actually appreciate the vulnerability that the Sox are showing, that they are putting their cards on the table and saying, we're trying. But let me say this. In the end, you better try hard. Saying you want something and then not following it up with a representative offer for either of these guys, for any free agent, whoever it may be, is to me malpractice toward your fan base and insulting toward your fan base. If you're going to tease them with the idea that you are potentially bringing in an elite player, then you better back that up with more than words. You better back it up with a Brinks truck.
Thoughts there from Jeff Passan from ESPN.com. A lot of theories there, but not a lot of answers in that particular soundbite. Yes, you're talking about being open and being transparent. There's nothing wrong with that. The thing is that if you're the White Sox, you want to be able, to me, as I've said many times here, similar to what the Cubs did by getting John Lester, you want your John Lester. You want to have some kind of building block along with the young players that you have on the roster. I think that's very important. If it doesn't happen here, it should maybe in 2020, but whatever it is, if you feel like you're getting close, I think you need to show some kind of commitment to winning. I think that's important. As you're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, so glad you're with us. We turn to a great author. We turn to a man who's a former Chicago Cub and analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. On the baseball side, it's Doug Glanville, friend of the program. He's with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Doug, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, Jonathan, how you doing, man? Always good to catch up to you.
I'm calling you now, man, because you're going to be busy for spring training. I won't be able to get a hold of you. So I think on a snowy Thursday night, this is the best time to talk to you before you get too busy.
Absolutely. Well, at least it's not like negative 28 anymore. So shell-shocking.
Oh, yeah, it is. There's no doubt about that. So I'm wondering your thoughts on both Machado, Manny Machado, and Bryce Harper. How surprised are you that both of these players don't have a home yet?
Yeah, I'm surprised. I think it's a reflection of sort of how free agency is starting to shift a little bit. It's you think of the NBA, LeBron James, there's sort of a domino effect, and everybody's the deer in the headlights waiting for the top guys to sign, and the market sort of sets after that. So you think of a domino hitting and rolling everybody out to know where do they stand in the marketplace. And these guys, it almost feels like the game is on hold and frozen because so much is contingent on what these guys are going to do. Teams are going to build around it. Organizations don't want to make certain moves until they're sure they're out of the sweepstakes. So it's a holding pattern. And I think you'll see a lot more action, once they move, not just because they're signing, because other players will fall in line.
Are you smelling collusion around this?
Well, I think collusion, it's a tough one. Usually it's something you see in retrospect because you'll have the data. And, for example, when you look at the graph of revenues of the sport and you look at the salaries, over time when collusion was happening, there was usually a clear gap and a big separation between the two. And it becomes much bigger than sort of these two lines going together in tandem. And I think, just working with the Players Association over the years, you notice dramatically, looking back over time, where those numbers fell. So that's what the tricky part is, other than sort of the smoking gun evidence. But, players are waiting. There's definitely that aspect of it. So, maybe you don't want 5 years. You want to try to get six. And as a result, you push up on spring training, and it causes a lot of chaos in the marketplace.
Author of the book, The Game for Where I Stand, it is Doug Glanville with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I find interesting what the Padres have done and what they're attempting to do, Doug. What is the likelihood that the Padres are able to sign Harper or Machado? What does that say for the organization that bottomed out and trying to be something again?
Well, it says a lot in their commitment to the future. These are organizations, think about the Padres, sure you see the struggles at the major league level, but a lot of these teams also built very strong bases through the minor leagues. Their drafts, their trades. So when they made moves, remember the Padres unloaded all these guys at one time. They're like, okay, we're jettisoning everybody, and we're going to pick up some prospects. And that's what the Yankees did in recent times. And now they have not only some star players willing to go there, which is sort of Yankees history, but they also have an ability to develop. So it's a nice combination. And that methodology seems to be working pretty well. The Cubs certainly set that tone with a wave of young players, and you add pieces like John Lester, and you have success. So I think when you're able to present that and really show and lay out the future, then a Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, they're more likely to say, okay, I'm going to take my talents to this place because not only I'm going to get paid, but I'm also going to be in a situation where I can be a part of a team that's going to be good for a long time.
From the White Sox standpoint, and Doug, you've been around here for a long time, so you know the business practices of the White Sox. Their finances are predicated on walk-up tickets. I mean, that's what it is. On a weekly basis, on a yearly basis, they're hoping for people to walk in on a sunny day or a wonderful night and be able to go to Guaranteed Rate Field. Because they have their share of season tickets holders, sure, but it's just that's kind of their business practice. So if you're the Sox, how far in are you to try to get Machado? Because it is about butts and seats. It's about interest in the product. How far are you going in to try to get Machado?
Well, you have to go deep, you know, and I certainly for multiple reasons. I mean, it's a reassurance, the season ticket holders, as you mentioned. You know, maybe they're stable, they're foundational, but you still need to establish that you're trying to win. You also mentioned, you know, people coming and walking up. Well, you know, it's a lot easier to walk up when you're like, okay, I'm going to go see Manny Machado. I'm going to see a team that's going to win. The challenge with the White Sox often is, as you mentioned, that inconsistency of those walk-up tickets or that side of the revenue makes it hard for a player, say, like a Machado to come and say, are they going to stabilize this over time? Or is it going to be, you know, sort of Marlin style where you go in, you win, and then you're going to jettison everybody and start over again? So you're going to have these waves of sort of reset. So if Machado's staring down, you know, 9-year deals or 8-year deals, you want to make sure 8 years are highly competitive. And he's the type of player that can garner that. He can be part of a core team that can be good a long time. So, you know, the White Sox have to sort of establish that visibility. These players are not just looking for only the money as much as seeing an opportunity to flow through. And the White Sox have a history of, okay, well, we're going to, you know, we'll do this, and then we'll kind of have to pull back. And we do this, and we're going to pull back. To the White Sox credit, they have a nice farm system. And in the same light we mentioned with the Padres, a chance to really sustainably win, but they need some pieces.
Doug, I said that if the Cubs weren't going to get Harper or Machado as is, they just have to be able to get it done. I mean, it was a very good baseball team, but just fell short of their goals. I think that as is, there's no reason why this team can't contend to win the division and try to make some noise in the playoffs. I just cite underachievement more so than, oh, my goodness, we need another bat. How do you see the Cubs for 2019?
Well, the Cubs, from the Cubs standpoint, I mean, they, you know, I like what Javier Baez said at the end of the season. You know, he said, look, we struggled all season long. All right, so, and that's interesting when you win 95 games.
Yeah, right.
But that was sort of the way it, you know, looked on a day-to-day basis. It was just a scrap battle every day. And really, the big thing was September. I mean, they still were in such a commanding position going into September. The Brewers got smoking hot with their MVP, and they also just timed it with the Cubs started to struggle. But their struggles were identifiable. Offensively, struggles. Bats started to disappear. Timely hitting disappeared. But the big thing that sort of got lost in the shuffle a little bit was like Pedro Strop going down, and then Morrow being on the shelf, and that was it. You know, he's sort of done for the year. And all of a sudden, you lost your entire back end of the bullpen. And that rhythm, and just, you know, just one game going the other way, and they're winning the division. I mean, that's how close it was. So you think about, you know, going back to September, you know, and still winning 95 games, there is, you know, small changes that need to happen. I mean, small moves. Contreras having a more consistent season throughout, for example, you know, balancing out the rotation where it's not so dependent on the bullpen. Those are small things that they already kind of have within. And now, as you said, they just have to execute.
Well, the one thing, there's a number of things that Major League Baseball could do a lot better, Doug, but I just don't understand the willingness for Major League Baseball to want to have some of these young players tethered to the minor leagues until we get to April 15th, April 16th. I mean, there is no reason why that Fernando Tatis Jr. or Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and I'm getting old, by the way, when I see these guys. I saw their dads play. You played against them. Dante Bichette's son, Bo Bichette. All these guys, they should play game one, right? Why should you wait after tax season to see these guys? Things have to change in that regard. You want to get butts in seats and interest in the ball club? Get the most dynamic minor leaguers and put them on your Major League ball club.
Well, there's no question Major League Baseball is looking at that closely. And it's a collective bargaining issue. You know, owners, players association have to come and decide not only, okay, what's best for the game, but you also have to, you know, decide you're going to have your priorities from what camp you're in. And the players association are certainly more interested in players being able to, you know, maximize their time and not have to push a year back to get paid. But here's the other side of the coin. I mean, you look at a Chris Bryant. There's been a wave in the last few years of players either getting renewed or something where they just get signed automatically, or these huge arbitration deals we saw with Arenado, you know, 1 year, $26 million or some, you know, record setter. So, you know, when you have that, you always have to watch what their agents are thinking, because if Chris Bryant's like, you know what, I'm just going to go, you know, year to year. If he decides like, oh, I'm going to go year to year, or Arenado goes year to year, they're going to get paid if they keep producing like that and ultimately make more money but take more risk in their future. And so they tie these players up. They lock them up. So if a team, if a player like Bryant is resentful to the organization for like, oh, we're going to have money, if they keep talking about, oh, we have another year of control. We have another year of control over you. You know, Scott Boras is going to be like, wait a minute, I'm going to make you pay for that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm going to find a way to get that money and claw that money back that you saved by keeping me 1 year delayed. And that's the danger, that when you have these Machado and Harper, they have a long memory. And they're going to be good a long time, where they can wait you out and produce, if they're healthy, produce every year, and it's going to cost you a lot. So there's going to be some collision that's going to happen between the Players Association and the owners to figure out how this works. Because you want the best players on the field day one. You know, you see Eloy Jimenez. I mean, come on, this guy is going to be like legendary in his offensive production, and you just want to see the guy on the field. And you're like, well, we can't call him up because the ticker starts. And, you know, come on. So that, I mean, but that's business, and that's what they have to address.
Lastly, how do you view the National League Central with the upgrades for the Reds, Milwaukee winning the division, St. Louis with the things that they've done? How do you see the National League Central, the competition for the Cubs?
Oh, it's gone up. I mean, look, Paul Goldschmidt alone going into the Cardinals. I mean, I've been on his bandwagon for a while, but just how good a player he is, and so well-rounded. And now he's going to be in a real competitive marketplace. I mean, the Diamondbacks have done decently, but now it's like the rivalry, right? The Cubs-Cardinals. So they've gotten better. And that's the challenge when you hear about teams like, I got to win now, or here's our window. There's a lot of truth to that, not only because of age, but because, you know, no year is guaranteed. And the 1 year you say you didn't seize the moment, the other teams are building. And now they're coming into their own. So the Reds are making moves. And now you don't have to just beat the Brewers, who have already been tough. The Cardinals are always in your face. But now you have a third team, the Reds, who, by the way, were kind of a nightmare at different times for the Cubs last season. So, you know, they got their hands full. And there's no question some of these teams have improved. And therefore, their game has to be next level.
When are you writing another book? Because, you know, your book is an icebreaker at parties. I just stand at my bookcase and say, yes, I know this author. The game for where I stand, Doug Glanville. And I just, like, I have a dog-eared for, like, page 46. When are you going to write another book?
Well, my agent and my publisher are asking me the same question. And, I mean, I love writing. And I get caught sometimes between responding to, like, current issues and, like, that long perspective of writing a book. But I'm teaching a class right now at Yale University on athletes and, like, social issues. And the students just give me so much content to go off of, mm-hmm. that there's a book there, because it's just fascinating about how sports and family and society and community come together around these goals and these passions. So that could be the next one, but in the meantime, maybe it's the game from where I stand, part two or something. I just have to sit at my desk and get it done.
Oh, well, that's good, because when I have my smoking jacket and my pipe and I'm, you know, just walking around mingling, and I pull the book out. Like, yes, this book here. Yes, Doug Glanville, a fine writer. It always helps me, man. You're helping me in the social circles.
And whatever I can do, man, Jason, any way I can help.
I don't think you can imagine me in a smoking jacket. Thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Anytime, man.
Doug Glanville with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as we talk baseball with him. Don't forget, full show tomorrow starting at 7 o'clock as we get a chance to get closer and closer to the Super Bowl. Man, it's right around the corner. Who do you like? Patriots? Rams? I like the guacamole.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood. Talk that barbershop talk, dude.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Back with you tomorrow starting at 7 o'clock with Chris Bleck in studio with me. And then Saturday from 3 to 7, it's Dickerson and Hood. Have you been with me on the weekends? If you're driving around on the weekends, 3 to 7 on Saturday. So look for us there on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. What haven't we got to? Man, this has been a full show, and I still have 2 hours of content. So here's what I need you to do, Eric. I need you to call Delavitt and tell him that I'm going to stay on here until... Is that good? Nope. Not going to work till midnight.
He didn't answer. Sorry. I don't know what happened there.
Well, if it's something related to me, I'm sure he wouldn't answer. No, not at all. Stephen Colbert knows what's it like to be in Chicago and it's cold.
I'd like to offer some cold weather tips to the good people of Chicago right now. Hey there. Chicagoans know that our cold is the worst, okay? Here's how you keep your polar sausage from snapping off. First, take all your old mustaches, sew them into a scarf. Second, if you're really cold, slice open and crawl inside a visiting Packers fan, okay? No, it works. I'm telling you, it's work. It's legal there. Finally, you're going to need a portable source of heat, okay? Get yourself 2 Portillo's Italian beefs with hot peppers, okay? Up against the cheeks, okay? Do not eat your emergency warmth. Go Bears. We'll get them next year.
Thank you, Colbert. I still love these prop bets. And by the way, here's an in for you. Todd Gurley of the Rams, he tips it off, I think, when it comes to the Gatorade. Rams running back Todd Gurley may have provided the Super Bowl spoiler for bettors in New Jersey. Gurley was asked on Twitter last week, what's the team's preferred Gatorade flavor? He responded, Ice Punch. Clear is the betting favorite at plus 200. But at FanDuel Sportsbook, 40% of the early money was on orange, plus 350. Yellow is also listed at plus 350, with blue and red, the long shots, at 400 and 500.
So if you're a smart bettor, you'll take the Rams. If you think the Rams are going to win, then you're going to parlay it with clear Gatorade.
I would never bet on the water, that flavored water. Never. Will Adam Levine be wearing a hat at the start of the halftime show? Plus 225, yes. Minus 350, no. I say no hat.
No hat. The man's got good hair. He's not going to put a hat on for his biggest performance.
Will Maroon 5 play Sweet Victory at halftime as a SpongeBob SquarePants tribute? Minus 230, yes. Plus 160, no. Thinking no.
I don't know the SpongeBob tie.
That's why I say no. It's just not doing that at all.
I like this one. Who will the Super Bowl MVP of the game thank first? Teammates, coach, family, God, owner, or doesn't thank anyone?
Who is it? The owner?
Yeah. Said? This is the winner of the MVP trophy. The Who's team. The first person they think? The teammates?
Team, not God. Only players do that.
Yeah.
It's true. No, only players do that. You never heard anyone outside of a player do that. Unless it's our dude from Clemson, Dabo Sweeney. Yes. He will thank God
that
first.
That does seem like something Dabo would do.
Yep. So we'll get to so many more of these prop bets tomorrow. It's crazy. Especially Gladys. Take the under and Gladys, for sure. She can't hit that high note no more. We thank you for being part of the program here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Kendall Gill, Alex Brown, Doug Glanville is with us. Show produced by Sean and Eric on the other side of the glass. Let's do it tomorrow at 7 o'clock right here.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so hood.
On ESPN 1000.